It's been more than a decade since The South Was Right by the Kennedy Brothers first went into print. Now, 100,000 copies plus later, it's still a bestseller. And what about Michael Grissom's Southern by the Grace of God even before that? Both works have been huge successes in rekindling the fires of our Southernness in the hearts of readers all across Dixie. And both share something else in common along with hundreds of other Southern works. Both are published by the only major pro-Southern publishing house in America, Pelican Publishing. Under the visionary work of Dr. Milburn Calhoun, Pelican Publishing has spent the last 37 years returning to its roots and providing Southern authors an alternative to Northern publishing houses. So whether you're an author looking for someone to publish your own manuscript, or you're just interested in reading a good book, go to ePelican.com today and browse around. You'll find books on a huge number of topics, Southern and beyond, as well as a friendly staff who know how to support Southern authors in getting their works out to the public. Pelican Publishing, giving us all a better choice. Visit us today at ePelican.com. All right, folks, you're listening to a live broadcast again tonight. This is another Pelican Pages segment that we bring you many Wednesday nights here on Dixie Broadcasting. And we're very pleased to have the special guest that we have with us tonight on the program, and I'll introduce him in just a moment. I do want to remind you that even during the broadcast, you can actually go to the Pelican website and take a look at the book we're going to be discussing in just a few minutes. Their website, again, is ePelican.com. And there's a browse tab at the top of the website. You can click on that and type in the author's name or the title that I'm about to give you, and you can pull the information up on this book and his other books, even while we're talking on the broadcast. And, you know, it's always a pleasure to have any Pelican author on the show with us. The folks that write, that are published by Pelican, turn out tremendous volumes of pro-Southern works. In a whole myriad of different subject fields, but the guest that we have tonight is special because not only is he a very great speaker and a great writer, but he's also a personal friend and has been for a number of years. And so I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Jim Kibler. Jim, thanks for being on the show tonight.
Thank you, Ray, for having me. It's good to be with you again.
Well, Jim's new book, or newest book, published by Pelican, is entitled Memories Keep. That's the main book we're going to talk about tonight. But Jim Kibler is certainly no stranger to many folks in the Southern movement. He is a professor at the University of Georgia. And we here in Georgia kind of argue, Dr. Kibler, with the folks in South Carolina about who actually owns you. And so I don't know. I don't know exactly which one of us you claim, but we both claim you, so.
Well, that's very good of you. I'm not going to incriminate myself either way. Both great states, sister states. So we've always worked together, and it's going to be required of us again.
It is, indeed. Jim Kibler is the author of Our Father's Fields, A Southern Story. And for that particular work, he was awarded the prestigious Fellowship of Southern Writers Award for Nonfiction in 1999. He's also written Child to the Waters, which is a collection of Southern fables, and also a novel entitled Walking Toward Home. And all of these are published by Pelican and are available at the Pelican website. So I guess as a way of starting, Jim, just tell us a little bit more about yourself than what we see on the biography page there. Who is Jim Kibler, and where do you come from?
Well, I was born in upcountry South Carolina, and I've taught at the University of Georgia since 1970. So I'm in my 38th year teaching at the University of Georgia. I maintain residence in both Athens, Georgia, and in my home county of Newberry County, South Carolina, where I have an old plantation house that's now, I guess, it's 200 and some odd years old.
Wow.
The house itself and the land of the plantation settled in the 1700s. I was born in Newberry County, and I still live there, and I think it's important for Southerners to stick by their roots, even when they have to go elsewhere to get a job or whatever. We can still keep close ties to our place. The old home place is so important to Southerners, so I'm a place person. Our father's field deals with that subject, really, of rootedness. And so when I teach my classes at Georgia, I always hope I'm giving my Georgia students homecoming degrees when they finish, and not send them just where the job is. Or
exactly.
If they go away from home to get that job, they can still keep ties, close ties. Southerners understand that sort of thing. I guess as far as trying to answer your question, I'm really trying to strengthen Southern heritage. That's what I'm one of my reasons for holding out and continuing to teach. That's one thing, and then in writing, well, that's a whole other area, and I tend to answer questions for 45 minutes, so I'll shut up.
No,
that
that's
we'll
fine.
Come back to those sorts of things.
We know, I was trying to think, Jim, I think I've probably known you now for about 10 years.
That's right.
And I know you were one of the first speakers in the Southern Movement that introduced me to why I feel the way that I feel about this place that we call home. You know, like you were mentioning a minute ago, a lot of Southerners do understand that there's a very strong tie between the Southern people and this land of Dixie, this place we call home, and it's something that is very different than our Yankee neighbors to the north.
Right.
And you were one of the first speakers, I think, to ever introduce me to a little bit of an understanding of why that is.
My, right, that means so much to me. First time I heard you speak, I knew you were the real deal. Packing a lot and in a little package.
Well,
sometimes,
I appreciate
but,
that.
I knew that when I first heard you speak that you were really a godsend to the movement. So I appreciate your kind comments about my influence on you. It's worked both ways, right?
Well, good. Now, I know that in this book, as with your others, Dr. Kibler, by the way, the title again, folks, is Memories Keep, K-E-E-P, Memories Keep, the author... James Kibler. You can look at it on the Pelican website even while we're talking now. But Dr. Kibler, the theme of this, as well as most of your other writings that I've read, is agrarianism in general.
Yes, that's right.
Many of our listeners, though, are probably unfamiliar in this modern era with exactly what is agrarianism. So kind of reintroduce us to what is it and why is it important to us Southerners?
Well, I could spend a lot longer than we have trying to define agrarianism, but a brief way would be keeping close ties to the land, if possible, plowing it, but if not that way, keeping close ties with the natural world, loving it, and to love it we have to know it real well, and to know it real well we have to stay put. It's a kind of interesting continuum here of things connected. To love something, you have to know it really well, and that means know its history all the way back as far as possible, and to know it in the day and know it in the night, the creatures that roam it, the stories associated with it, everything about it. And then you can love a place. And the most important thing to say then as a result of that love is you're not likely to abuse it.
Right.
Use without love is abuse. And that's a quotation I take from Wendell Berry, who is probably the foremost living agrarian writer today and a great influence on me. One of my close friends and correspondents, certainly a great influence on me. So those of you who are trying to define agrarianism to elaborate on what you already know of it as a Southerner, read Wendell Berry, B-E-R-R-Y, and he has great essays, great novels, great poems, and so, of course, I'll Take My Stand is a good book to know if you're trying to define agrarianism, but as my definition would go, knowing your place, knowing your place well, and in the South, our culture, our place is from the fields. It's agrarian and not urban. So staying close to the land, staying close to nature, trying not to abuse the land, being good stewards of the land, and that can take all forms. Many forms, I should say, and so I suppose my definition of agrarianism might be a little bit broader than some others, but in my novels, I'm trying to uphold community, define community, strengthen community, and give readers a sense of what a community is. So many young readers have never experienced community, unfortunately, and to be able to uphold community, I think we first have to know what it is, and I don't know what effect novels, my novels, will have on that, but I know to reclaim community, we first have to know what we've lost. And in knowing what we've lost, we have to have it defined and created. I think, and through literature, through novels, through characters dramatized, better than an essay. I mean, essays are wonderful, and they have their role. Expository writing works, but I think to grab the heart, you have to show lives. The lives of characters, and so that's what I'm really trying to do in defining an agrarian community in my novels.
And of course, many of us in the Southern movement have made attempts during our lifetime to get back to agrarianism on a personal level.
That's right.
Either by going back to our real home place or finding some land of our own to call our own.
That's right.
But Southerners in general, Jim, are very, very many times in an urban setting or a suburban setting. They're not really in a rural setting anymore. Is it possible to still, as a culture, as a society, still embody these principles of agrarianism even when we are not in an agrarian setting?
I think certainly so. We have to find our way in doing so, our particular way. I think with the young folks, it's very encouraging. I'm a teacher and I deal with. I'm privileged to teach some of Georgia's finest minds, and they're looking for something that they're not finding in the urban environment. They're Southerners. They've been knocked about a bit, but they're still Southern in that they desire that closeness to nature and family and community. And their parents haven't always done good things by them. They've moved about too much. They've gone where the job is and dragged those poor children everywhere. Some of my students have told me that they've moved. This is amazing. To think of, but 16 and 17 times in 21 years.
Wow.
And I asked the young lady who said that, and I said, "What did your father do?" And she said, "He set up chambers of commerce." And I thought, oh, there's a whole story in that.
Yeah, there sure is.
But they're not happy. I said, "How do you feel about it?" And she said, "I'm really angry." And I said, "Well, you can become native to a place." Wendell Berry's good friend Wes Jackson has a novel, a collection of essays entitled Becoming Native to This Place. And he talks about, for the deracinated ones, for the uprooted ones, how one finally has to make a stand and, you know, root yourself down into right. that place, learn about it, and stick by it and raise your children accordingly. So you break the cycle. And so I sense that there out there, there's this kind of really healthy groundswell of people who are fed up with the progressive push toward progress, this kind of mindless progress
right.
for the sake of progress, and they're looking for something something to stabilize, to settle down things. And of course that deals with faith as well. That's part of the package.
Well,
but,
that's right, and that was actually going to be my next question as a follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly that biblical worldview that most to which most Southerners subscribe is us being stewards of creation.
Exactly.
It certainly lends itself towards the principles of agrarianism that are traditional to the South. Do you see this kind of... I know there are other societies and cultures around the globe that are agrarian or have been agrarian at one time or another. Do they have the same core values that Southern and Celtic peoples do with agrarianism?
I think so, and you've used the magic word for me, and that's Celtic. I see the South as Grady McQuinney and Forrest McDonald have as essentially Celtic in its background. Of course, if there's more to the South,
sure.
and especially the white. We're saying the South, I'm meaning the white South, but Celtic peoples understand that very well, and I think the Southerners share a lot with the other Celtic nations of the world in that way. Now, I know things are changing there too. In Ireland, there's a lot of loss of farming there, but the tide seems to be changing here. Gauging from the young minds that I deal with, the kind of dissatisfaction with deracination, a word that we don't use very often. I usually ask my students what it means, and they say, I don't know. And, of course, it means being uprooted, rootlessness. When you teach modernism in 20th century literature, you're always talking about alienation, isolation, fragmentation.
Mm-hmm.
The critics never mention what I consider the key word, and that's deracination, which is understandable because the teachers usually are deracinated.
Right. they are themselves.
And so they don't really see, I don't think they see, it's so obvious they don't see. But in our Celtic culture, rootedness and close association with place and family, these are essentials,
mm-hmm.
and that may not be the case for non-Celtic or some non-Celtic folk, but family is the key word, and in our father's fields, I learned that the story of the South is the story of various families, all linked together and tied through a common culture, especially through the loss and the grand smash, as Mary Boykin Chestnut called the war. We have that. We share that in common. That loss. Some people have said that the main story of Southern literature is the loss of the family plantation, or the loss of the family place, the home place. And I think that's probably right. So the attempt to gain it back in one way or another, whether you can buy the actual place or simply treasure the associations with that place and build on that. I've always thought that it's great for a family to have a place to come to have their family reunions or at least to gather occasionally or just
right.
know where know where it is. And so I think that's Celtic, too. That close association with place and all the traditions that go with that place.
And of course,
that's what I'm seeing students desiring more than anything right now.
Well, that's very refreshing to hear.
Yeah.
And obviously, for many of us, it's obvious anyway that the whole postmodern philosophy of moving people away from agrarianism and the principles of agrarianism is because if you uproot them and you move them away and you systematically tear down their culture, then they're a lot easier people to control.
Exactly.
If they don't have any sense of who they are or from where they came.
That's right.
And
I've come to that conclusion too, Ray. They're like those chess pieces, those pawns on the board, easily moved around.
Mm.
The allegiance has to be to one thing and one thing only, and that's government and industry controlled by government. You've got to have allegiance to that job or to that government.
Mm.
Government's very jealous. It can't have any other gods before it.
Wow. You know? And that's pretty to the point, but that's exactly what it is.
So if people get pushed about, moved about, they don't have allegiance to family. So many families are fractured. And then on top of that, no sense of community, no sense of loyalty. That makes the land itself mm-hmm. open to abuse, and then the people
right.
themselves abused and abusing one another. And of course, the only savior to that, as we all know from TV, is government can bail you out, whether
yeah.
it's the bank or the Bear Stearns or whatever else.
That's
it's
right.
always looked to government as the savior.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we know how that's going to turn out. And I think people are getting suspicious of that line.
I certainly hope so. Folks, we're talking to Jim Kibler, who is the author of Memories Keep, a relatively new book from Pelican Publishing, and actually the author of several books with Pelican Publishing. You can take a look at this book while we're talking tonight to Dr. Kibler online by going to the Pelican website at epelican.com. In just a minute, we're going to come back and we're going to talk more with Jim about this specific book itself. And I think it's a book that you folks that are listening to the broadcast would certainly find right in line with what you hear on Dixie Broadcasting. I think it's a book that you would enjoy reading and hopefully maybe gain some insight from as well. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back in just a couple of minutes with Jim Kibler right here on this Pelican Pages segment.
Oh, long ago in Dixie, folks lived upon the land, working close together. And prayed and cried. The most important things to them were God and family. They weren't ashamed of the former name and took it on with pride. Oh, the country is the life for me. I'll have no other one. I love to feel the freedom of wind and sky and sun. You may talk about your city, streets and towers grand, but give me fields and mountains made by God's own hand. But everything his name was progress, offered wealth and fame. Homesteads were deserted as folks answered to his call. Little did they understand was a pied piper's game. Oh, the country is the life for me, I'll have no other one. I love to feel the freedom of wind and sky and sun. You may talk about your city, streets and towers grand, but give me fields and mountains made by God's own hand. Now the years have passed away, and what a sight I see. Empty farms give witness to the dreadful damage done. There's a present generation that's forgotten how to live. If you ask me, I'd say they've lost a deal more than they've won. Oh, the country is the life for me, I'll have no other one. I love to feel the freedom of wind and sky and sun. You may talk about your city, streets and towers grand, but give me fields and mountains made by God's own hand. So let's strike for independence and stake our claim again, to find once more that civil joy that comes with honest toil. And trusting the Creator who gave to us this land, we'll show the world how fathers live upon their native soil. Oh, the country is the life for me. me, I'll have no other one. I love to feel the freedom of wind and sky and sun. You may talk about your city, streets and towers grand, but give me fields and mountains made by God's own hand.
They have published some of the most well-known authors in the Southern movement, from the Kennedy brothers to Jimmy Cantrell. Pelican Publishing Company has an incredibly diverse library of over 1,300 titles to their credit, with about 60 new titles published annually. If you like books about history, literature, humor, Cajun cooking, travel, or just about anything else, Pelican's website, ePelican.com, is the place for you. With online catalogs and secure online shopping, it's never been easier to tap into the wealth of knowledge and reading pleasure that Pelican has to offer. At ePelican.com, you can browse all of the Pelican's titles and shop for just the right book for yourself or a gift for someone else. Treat yourself today. Visit ePelican.com. That website again, ePelican.com.
Welcome back to another Pelican Pages segment. This is Ray McBerry, your host, and we're talking to Dr. Jim Kibler, the author of a book entitled Memories Keep, and an agrarian work in the tradition of the other books that Dr. Kibler has written prior to this, and it's part of an ongoing series.
That's right. I call it the Claybank County series, and Claybank County is an amalgam of various Piedmont, upcountry counties. Anywhere you have red clay, that's that could work. So it's not just Newberry County, but other counties. And I'm trying to define the culture in its own way through the characters. It is an agrarian culture. That is what the South is, despite Atlanta and other cities. Our real being comes out of the soil and our rivers and our hills, our mountains, our forests. And what I tried to do in Memories Keep is to portray that community across racial lines. I have as much in the novel about a black farmer whose children have basically deserted him to go to cities, and he's getting old. In fact, he's not going to last long, and he's left by himself and his neighbor, who is a white neighbor, young man who loves farming, is learning from his black neighbor, because the young man's father is gone. His family has died, and he's left alone. So it's kind of a natural fit. In the Celtic way of fostering, Mr. Pink, the old man, fosters Triggerfoot, his name Trig, a real name from my area. Nickname is Trig. Triggerfoot is his full name. And it's a good friendship, although the more than 60 years separate them. And it's a story of their relationship, and then of how the old man's body, basically all he has to give, his dead body, brings the children back from as far away as Oregon and Texas and Washington, D.C., to bury him. And so that's sort of the way the novel begins. His children come back to the land, and Triggerfoot is involved in this. And so I won't say much more about the plot, but I've always thought that black people and white people have a lot in common through their agrarian background.
A lot more in common than the enemy would like us to think.
Exactly. And, of course, you know, we all know that there's a vested interest in keeping us separated and at each other's throats. But if we are to work together, as Triggerfoot and the children of Mr. Pink are to do, they They have to have common ground. They have to have a same language. And it's more than just eating turnip greens in college, although that matters.
Yeah, that matters too.
It's an understanding about land, and the agrarian tradition is the bond that bonds Southerners, even if they've become deracinated and shipped off to cities and moved about. They have, as a people, that shared strength, which is, and of course, in faith and family. And these are strengths that can't be shaken, as I look at it. And it can't be defeated as long as we stay true to them. As long as the people don't forswear their background. Essentially, they can come together. So that's part of Memories Keep. It is plotted. I mean, there is a storyline, and I won't give it away. But I think it's an easy read, effortless, I hope. I didn't write this like T.S. Eliot wrote The Wasteland. That meant that you'd have to go to your dictionary or your literary anthologies for every line. But there is in the novel a background, a Southern literary background, that if you know Southern literature, you'll know I am very quietly referring back to the strengths of our Southern literary heritage. And I think if you are a well-read Southerner, as many of your listeners are, you'll pick up on that and it'll be kind of fun. But you don't need to. I've made it so that I've written it so that you don't need to have a Southern literary background to appreciate what's going on here.
You're kind of a little bit of a step ahead of my questions here, so in a way you've already answered the next question, but that's okay. I'm going to answer it anyway in case you want to add anything to it. What is it, Jim, that you hope the reader takes away from this book?
Well, I hope he enjoys it, first of all, and I hope he's inspired by it. And I hope he's left wanting more, which I'm going to supply. In fact, I can sort of break the news to the listeners.
We'd love for you to do it right here on the show.
That would be good. I signed a contract last week, and I finished doing the printouts and so forth to send in to Pelican the next novel, which should... I assume it will be out in the fall, and its title, I can give you its title, it's called The Education of Chauncey Doolittle, who is one of the characters in Walking Toward Home. Walking Toward Home is the first in the series, and it involves three main characters: Chauncey, Triggerfoot, and then the general store owner and operator, Tildy Henderson. So three friends, Trigg, Chauncey, and Kildy. Memories Keep is largely Trigg's book. The new book, The Education of Chauncey Doolittle, is largely Chauncey's book, which makes sense.
Right.
See, Walking Toward Home was a kind of triple balancing act of bringing these three together. So when you read the three novels together, you can read them in any order, essentially. But I would probably start with Walking Toward Home, and then Memories Keep is a flashback. Triggerfoot is in his 50s in Walking Toward Home, but in Memories Keep, he's in his 20s, so it's a flashback to the 1970s, set in the 1970s. The Education of Chauncey Doolittle is set in 2007. So it's Faulknerian in that time is not linear progressive, as we know. Memory plays havoc with that scientific way of doing time. And memory is so important in my novels. Memories Keep is named after a poem by the Georgia poet Byron Herbert Reese, and It's the last place. The keep of a castle is the last place to be taken. It's the unassailable place. It's the sort of the holy of holies. This is where you go under attack. And I consider the memory as that last bastion. And that's why scientists don't like memory so much. And that's why the progressive hates memory and tradition and heritage. But we have to keep that memory inviolate. So that's what's at work in Memories Keep, in particular, but in all three of these novels as they are set. So you don't have a linear progressive sense of time. I know we're getting rather abstract and philosophical here, but I think that's important. A Southerner's sense of time is not the usual scientific one. We understand that, you know, Faulkner's great statement that it's not was, but is, essentially, our past comes into our present and is mingled. So
that's right.
I think the readers might find that interesting. I know we sound awfully philosophical here, but I'm trying to give the basis of my vision of the world as you might find it expressed, I hope, very simply and touchingly in the lives of these Southern characters.
Well, you certainly have a very gifted way of taking those principles and demonstrating how they affect today and even our future for the Southern people in general.
Well, I'm hoping to do that, and I hope that the books are enjoyable. That is, I think, the duty of a writer. First of all, he can't bore you to death.
I've read some that did.
Well, and so I hope they're readable, and then I hope they're just more than entertainment. Though I don't think I would. I don't want to waste your time by just giving you entertainment gratuitously.
Well,
I think there's some substance, or at least I've tried.
Well, you know,
my best.
A good Southern preacher or a teacher, either one, can sit there and tell his congregation or his students a story, and the folks listening be entertained and not even realize they learned something along the way.
Right. Our Lord knew that parables were very important.
He sure did.
That's the way you teach meaningfully. And I've written, in a way, parables. I'm a Lutheran, was and is. I was taken to church when I couldn't even understand language. That was the duty my parents understood and took quite seriously, and I benefited from it. And so growing up, a person who has heard the King James Bible, and that's the only one I can abide still, the King James Version of the Bible with all the wonderful parables. My minister over in South Carolina likes my books, and I'm glad of that. And he understands that in a quiet way, they share the means of communication via parable without being allegorical. Sort of, they're a little less obvious in presenting their meaning. A little less obvious, but if you look deeply, you're going to see, well, he's just telling us a parable. It's just a little less obvious.
Right.
So I hope that your reader, your listeners who read, will remember that too when they're reading these books. To see that there's something in the back of my mind there to get me to tell these stories in the way I tell these stories. To what end, in other words.
Now, before we leave, Dr. Kibler, obviously this is a Pelican Pages segment. They're the publishing house for you, and they're the publisher you've chosen to go with for this entire series of books. Tell us what made you choose Pelican, and why are you choosing to stay with Pelican?
Well, first and foremost, Mr. Milburn Calhoun, I was on the line with him, in fact, on Monday. He reaffirmed to me then his great desire to uphold Southern heritage. And that's, I mean, he's of retirement age, and I think that's the reason he's not retired. He's battling to the end. He had some health issues with cancer, but he's done okay, and this was a while back. And I know it would have been easy just simply to turn over the reins to someone else, but Melbourne is very much committed, and we all owe Melbourne a great debt of gratitude. And we, in doing so, we need to buy his books, not necessarily mine, although that'd be fine. But we need to support our people, and I don't think it's a great sacrifice to do it for us, because he's doing first-rate work. And as I heard the advertisement, he is the only, Pelican is the only press, which is really what I would say, one that I would trust fully to uphold the Southern heritage. So they've been good to me in not asking me to change things, not asking me to be more politically correct or whatever else.
Right.
And so they give me freedom. I think Melbourne understands what I'm trying to do. I don't think my books have sold as much as I would have wanted to for his sake. But, I mean, I'm not Grisham or one of these big names. But he sticks by me, and that means a whole lot to me. It's a family organization. His operation is family oriented, and I know his wife works, his daughter works for Pelican, and I like that about them. It's very, what I would say, casual in that way,
right?
But being professional at the same time. So I can't say enough about Pelican to recommend their books to the audience.
Well, that pretty well says it. That's a pretty good commercial right there.
I'm not in the employ. But,
well, it certainly is true. There's not anyone doing anywhere near the job that Pelican is doing in putting out pro-Southern books year
right.
after year.
Right.
And we're very grateful to have them in existence, period, but we also certainly appreciate the fact that they are one of our major sponsors here at Dixie Broadcasting.
That's right. And they understand your worth, the value of what you're doing. I'd like to plug a few of their books, if I may.
Sure, go right ahead.
One is Jimmy Cantrell's How Celtic Culture Invented Southern Literature, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Title is. And I applaud that book. Jimmy was the first critic to devote a chapter to my work, and I'll always be indebted to him for that. One of the chapters of that book deals with my fiction.
Well, you know, we had Jimmy on here about that book over a year ago, and we actually talked about that chapter in the book
right.
a little bit.
Well, and then Brian Sisko, who is a friend of mine, has done this wonderful book on the civilian. Let's see if I can get the title.
Yeah, War Crimes Against Southern Civilians.
That's it. That's a must for everybody. That's a really first-rate, important book. And so, of course, the Kennedy's books are important for us. But these two new books, I think if you don't have them, you ought to get those.
Well, we definitely appreciate you being on the program with us, Dr. Kibler, and whether it's the fall or whenever the new book is ready, I hope you'll come back and be on the program with us again.
Well, I look forward to doing that, right? This has been a lot of fun.
Well, folks, you've been listening to another Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting. We do encourage you to go to the Pelican website and browse through the many books that they have there, but in particular, take a look at the book that we've been talking about tonight, which is entitled Memories Keep, and the author, of course, is James Kibler. You can do a search there on the Pelican website under the Browse category and find this and the other books by Jim as well, and we encourage you to do that. You can actually purchase the books online from Pelican at a reduced price if you do that through their website, and as many of you know, you can also find most of the Pelican titles on the shelf of any of your major bookstores across the country as well. But if you go to the Pelican website and order directly from there, then you'll be able to get the discount that they have online, and it'll still be to you in just a few days' time. We also appreciate our listeners letting Pelican know that you appreciate them sponsoring the radio station and continuing to provide the good works in print that they do. And so we will wrap this show up, but until next week, I'm Ray McBerry, your host, thanking you for listening to another Pelican Pages segment right here on Dixie Broadcasting.